It is 9 a.m. in the West Coast, and it is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it is 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is May 18, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to take a look at what's going on in Israel. But first, we want to welcome a great, great friend of mine that is going to talk to us about the Middle East and what is going on there in Libya, Mr. David Gerby. Dr. David Gerby, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me for the third time, Orly.
Yes, sweetheart, you've been before, and you are such a relevant person that now you are really hot. I know that you got so much news going on, and Libya is your home, home by birth, I guess. And you went, and you're talking from Italy right now to us, but it's so important for us to understand what is the situation in Libya today and how the world and the people of the world can help to resolve the situation?
So if I would start from the moment from now, they had a meeting in Vienna, and they had an agreement where they will continue to work now on Tripoli. So the government will be based in Tripoli. Even if the General National Congress disagrees, Gwelli is still considered himself as the Prime Minister. But the new Prime Minister of the GNA, General National Accord, still is considered by the international community, United Nations, Europe, USA, the recognized government, Sarraj, Fayez Sarraj, and his other nine ministers. So the it's getting a little better, and I am still in touch with the United Nations. I just received an email this morning about to acknowledge that I will get a meeting with Mr. Kobler when the time will be right around June, because he will pass in Rome, and I will meet now one of his assistants in Rome next week, because next week I have a conference that I co-organize with other people, and it's about the destruction of Libya, construction of Libya. So
yes, David, I want you to tell us about it and when it's going to take place, so we can invite some listeners that are maybe in Rome at that time, or relevant people that would like to, because this is like in the middle of reorganization of a nation. So your effort is a life-saving. It's so important. So I want them to understand that whatever you're doing on the ground in Rome is essential for the well-being of the government of Libya. So tell me, when it's going to take place, this conference?
It's going to take place next Wednesday, 25th of May, at 2:30 p.m. in the University of Rome, La Sapienza, and it will be the head of the university, Professor Eugenio Gaudio, and it will be the doctors, the Irene Piccolo, and it will be the Professor Rafael Cadin, Dr. Antonio De Bonis, His Excellency Giulio Terzi di Sant'Agata, that he was actually ambassador in Israel for a long time, and he was also the Minister of Foreign Affairs. The people that would like to subscribe, they just need to call. They have a 320-365-9033 or 345-842-5432. Email at info@geaeducation.org. And they can say that they receive this information, that are invited to this conference, from destruction to construction, prospective to intervene with awareness in Libya. What to do now? This is what we're going to talk. And there are guests there that I invited from Libya, or Libyan that they are in exile, Libyan that cannot come. So many people come from all around to attend this conference. And we have also translation from Italian to Arabic for the guests. One member of the parliament also will come, or maybe two.
I think that what you know, whatever you're doing there is important because you've been back and forth to Libya before, and you know how sensible the people there. They are really divided. And the fact that they agreed to have the government in Tripoli, it's good. That Sarraj got to be the prime minister is excellent. Remember, we had such a rough time with him getting back to Libya. And it was an incredible story how he got back in. What about the minority voice? What kind of solution they're going to find for them?
I have been in touch. I'm also the representative of the Amazigh from the Supreme Council. And I've been in touch with the Amazigh, with the Tuareg, with the Tabu, with the Kragel, with the Christian, and with the gay, and with the Jewish. So all the minority, often they write to me because they are still discriminated. So they try to get their own right, but it's very difficult because they still are not yet convinced not to play duplicity. Because on one side they want to have democracy because they see that the fanatism, extremism doesn't work. But on the other side, they don't want to have democracy because they want to be the only religion in Libya, the only Arab people. So they follow the step of Gaddafi that wanted to make just an Arab country. But then, for example, someone called me from Canada. They knew about the conference, and the people in Canada, they heard about this conference. Say, "Oh, this Libyan Jewish has organized this. He will never going to get back because this is a Muslim country, so we don't want anyone." So another friend of mine, Amazigh, he said to him, "Look, and so you are here. So how would you feel that you live here with your own family, with your wife, with your children, that they would tell you, 'Oh, we in Canada are just Christians, they kick you out from here.'" So he could not answer. So they kind of want democracy outside, but the inside they don't want to have democracy. So there is this split. They need to understand that they need to have a dialogue because they didn't yet learn the to agree to disagree, to have different point of view, and to see the diversity as a value, as a richness, and not as a threat or as a risk or as danger. So they still don't understand this because of the education. And the problem there is, the biggest problem is that they have difficulty in dialogue because they have the culture of the tribe. And normally when you have tribe, there is no democracy. So today the Pope wrote something. They made him an interview about if he also declared that it was better when Gaddafi was there because all this chaos didn't work. So even the Pope had this stand. But I believe that the transition time between dictatorship to democracy, it takes time. But if they ask now the international community to intervene, to be support, so they need to be 100% for democracy. This is why I've been challenging all the time the United Nations to say, you cannot just agree to play duplicity and to exclude the Jew. I want to go back and to live in my house and to have the shop of my father. I want to open a clinic with the shop of my father. I want to be free to be there. So if I want to go back there and travel wherever I want to go and stay in different place, why I should not go back home? Because I am a Libyan. So there is no way. Like in Israel, you can have a Christian, Jewish, Muslim. You even have all the language. If you want to go to Jerusalem, you can read the Jerusalem in three languages, in English, in Arabic, and in Hebrew. So it's a country where welcome democracy, will welcome all the diversity and respect all the diversity. So,
but it is a symptom, David, it's a symptom all over the Middle East. They, for some reason, they think that nobody else is allowed to be but Muslims. And within the Muslim, they're fighting themselves in Syria. They're fighting between the Sunni and the Shiite. And you don't have this kind of friction in Libya, right?
Yes, they have the same thing. But in the same time, they saw that without the relationship with the West, with Europe, with the external world, they cannot make it because they need it. So if not, they are in the chaos. They kill each other. So in order to have a new country that is based on democracy, where everybody is included, where the pluralism is appreciated and the human fundamental human rights are respected, if they ask this to the West, and so they need to respect all the package. They cannot take part of the package. This is why with Mr. Kobler all the time I tell him the same thing. I say, you need to include also the Jew, because this is the mistake that they did. And by starting, we have been the first community that has been kicked out from Libya. And now everybody is kicked out. All the people are going out from Libya because they are afraid to be murdered, kidnapped. Now the fashion there is to kidnap the people and to get the money. The bank, you can get 50 euros a day. They don't have the money. They don't have the job. So I hope that they will understand that the way they cannot make just about democracy. They just need to make a stand. As Abraham Lincoln said, be sure where you put your feet and then stand firm. So you want to have democracy, they need to stand firm in democracy. And they need to be strong enough and say, okay, we respect all the minorities, even the Christians. And they are there, they are hiding, they are afraid. Everybody is living in the culture of, not in the culture of fear, they live in the culture of terror. They cannot speak with the neighborhood. They cannot share this idea. I have so many friends that they speak with me in Skype, in Facebook, on phone. They say, but don't mention my name. We love you. There are so many people that love the Jewish and want to be in touch, but don't tell, because they have a fear of retaliation. Because if somebody going to talk, then they're going to say, ah, you're a friend of the enemy, so you're against Islam, so you need to be killed. So this is the culture. This is the culture. So even the good people, if they are not supported by the West, and if they don't stand with the West 100% and say that they are a moderate Muslim, but really acting, that they need to walk their talk, then there is no hope. But I challenge their ways all the time. What I did in 2011, that they broke the wall to the synagogue, because I wanted to prove myself, and I risked my life, and I didn't risk the life of any Jew, because I was the only one there, and that if they would kill me, okay, I did what I believed in my vision. But this is what I want to test. They really are for democracy or no? And in fact, 5 years after, we can see the disaster that happened, just because they didn't stand firm to fight for democracy, where democracy is what they're asking now to the United Nations and to the rest of the world. So if they ask, they need to respect, and they could go back, restore the synagogue, allow the Jew of Libya, if they want to go to pray in their place, and to put a flower in it as a symbol to the grave, to the cemetery that they destroyed, they devastated. And if they want to see the place where they're born, maybe go there to have a vacation, maybe to go there to have business, maybe to go there to see their old friends, you know. So it's like it's in Germany, like it's in Tunisia, like it's in Morocco.
But you know, David, democracy is educational. You need to teach, and also you have to have a structure in the government or in the, you know, in the system to prepare for democracy. It's not so easy just to launch it on them. We need to be understandable about that. You know, you cannot just drop the book of democracy on their head and say, hey, you need to give us freedom. I think that something the United Nations needs to consider is to give a mandate to the land of Libya to some responsible party, and they can, you know, they will have the authority to start building up the system. Because right now, as you see it, you told me they went from chaos. They destroyed the system. They, you know, they even killed the ambassador of America, the American ambassador in Benghazi.
Christopher Stevens in 2012 in Benghazi.
Exactly. And that brought even, you know, American, which were a best friend for their democracy, to reconsider and to close everything down. It's not good. If they are working with the United Nations, one country needs to take the lead and take responsibility. Put people on the ground, boots on the ground, and start working with the people. Of course, the prime minister will be prime minister, you know, in function, but it will have to be worked with the other system of the mandate country. I think that will be the best advice I would suggest to everybody, because if you let children or uneducated people go ragged like this, it's just going to get worse. And whatever money you throw their way, it won't help. You need to put a system and you need to have some force. Like, you know, Jordanian have the best police ever in the old Middle East, I heard. They are the system. If they, you know, you work with them, maybe they can have, you know, some kind of responsibility. They are responsible, they're honorable, they work hard with, and, you know, I don't know what's part of Libya it's going to be, but it can be a good option.
Yes, yes. This is what they work now. They work to have a security and stability and the training, because it's the first thing that they have. Then there is another problem that is related to Benghazi, to the General Haftar, is about the army. So there is a the system of the tribe is complicated. The problem with the minority, there is the problem with the other different group, the militia group, because some of this militia group, they are just people that went out from the jail, that they've been a criminal, and they create this group. They have the weapons from Gaddafi, so they become like a gang. So they are not really related to 17th of February, the day of the revolution, but it's just related to power. There, everybody wants to have money and they want to have the power. So
tell me, what about Daesh? What about ISIS? Because we heard that they are taking some of the, you know, areas and work from there. Is that the threat? Is that something that we have to consider?
No, because now USA asked to lift the embargo, partial of the embargo, so that they can give also weapons to the GNA, so that the army, they can have something to fight. It's just about the House of the Representative, Aguila Sala. He didn't want to make the vote. He all the time has been boycotting the vote in Tobruk. So now the USA and Europe give sanction to the president of the House of the Representative because he has been boycotting all the time. So, but if they don't vote, so this is not yet recognized. It's only recognized by international community. So this is now a struggle because they need to get again to a vote and to recognize. If not, the Libyan insider will be upset because they would say, okay, this is a government that has been chosen just by the international community, not by the Libyan themselves. So we are slaves of the international community. So this is what's now the struggle between the inside and the outside. So they need to find a way to have a vote in order for them to be recognized, not from only outside, but also from inside.
What about the economical side of the thing? Because we know that Libya has natural resources. We have in the south, you told me that there are some oil fields. Who is in control of that?
Now there is in control, there's part of Eni is the one that take care of this. And there is part of the France, and there's part of the UK. But at the moment, they don't export so much, so they need to go back on track and to start export, because by producing, they can sell and the money can come. There are just 5 million of Libyans, so there is a lot of richness there. There's gold, there's diamond, there's oil, there's gas, there is the tourism, there is the agriculture, there is a history, there is all the port. This is important. If they just make an agreement, everything can be back on track. And Italy is the most important partner in this, because as you remember, the Libya was the Italian colony. So,
right.
So there are many Libyans that even speak Italian. There is and now also that we have the refugee issue that we had until now in the Mediterranean. Now it's become more calm. Now there's more, they monitor more. So the people that they try, the snipers that they try to sell the trip to Europe, so they stop now. It's not as before, as dramatic, and so many people die in the Mediterranean. They call the Mediterranean the cemetery of the sea. So now is it from this side is better. So, but I think in the next week we will see some development, because if they, in Vienna, they had this agreement to leave part of the embargo and to go ahead and to make that, because now the place, the government place, is just in the navy side of the port of Libya, but they want to take it just on the building now, in the center of Tripoli, where it was the General National Congress, the unrecognized government, the self-determined, self-declared that they are the government. So they're moving step to step inside and try to be more effective. So we need to see for the next week. Maybe we can talk the next time, and then we'll let
yes.
you know what will happen.
Definitely, I would love to speak to you again after you know that you have the conference. And first of all, I thank you for all your effort. I bless and pray for your success. I hope that Libya will be a democracy that will include everybody, and maybe will be a good example for the rest of the Arab world. But with the help of Italy and the help of you know other countries that can help take the you know the effort and makes Libya whole again. That will be a great thing for the all Middle East. Thank you, David Jerby. Dr. David Jerby, good luck on the conference next week in the University of Rome on the 25th, right?
Yes, on the 25th. Thank you, Orly. It was a pleasure as always, very stimulating and very present.
Thank you,
everyone,
sir.
For listening. Thank you for the radio.
Thank you so much. God bless you, David.
Thank you.
Be
God
well.
Bless.
Ciao to Roma. Yeah.
Ciao.
Ciao. All right. And we'll be back after some music.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me? When you don't believe a word I'm saying, we can't go on together. We're suspicious.
And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth on BBS Radio Studio One. Doug Newsom is behind the scene helping us. Thank you so much, Doug, again. And David Jerby, Dr. David Jerby, is working hard to make the conference for next week in Rome, in the University of Rome, to talk about the future of Libya. Now, why should we care? We should care because we need to care about every country in the world since we are human. If we organize society, we need to consider taking care of our brothers, our own. And humanity doesn't have the luxury to neglect anybody because after it comes to pay the you know to pay the price. And paying the price is something that many people recognize, but people took great risk in the past to safeguard one countries. And today we are commemorating some of those people that took the risk and went through enemy country, enemy lands, and worked hard to safeguard the nation of Israel. Today we want to remember the spy of Eli Cohen that died, got hanged by the Syrian government, and his body is still to be retrieved from Syria. That for a decade, it's still there. His family wants it, and we have the file to listen to his story.
Shorty. Welcome back to the news today. Thanks for being with us. And we're moving now to an Israeli spy story that lives on even five decades later. Eli Cohen was perhaps Israel's most well-known spy, a Mossad agent sent to Syria who managed to infiltrate the political and military elite at the highest levels. 50 years ago today, after being arrested and convicted of espionage by a humiliated Syrian government, Cohen was publicly executed, hanged in a central square in Damascus. And joining me tonight in the studio is Sophie Ben-Dror, Eli Cohen's daughter. Good evening.
Erev Tov.
Good evening.
So I want to first of all ask you, what do you remember from your father, of your father?
I remember him coming on vacation every 6 months. It's a very personal memory of mine that no one has told me. He was very happy on these occasions, very excited and happy to see us. He gave me a lot of attention with gifts and dresses and toys. He must have felt very alone and felt a lot of guilt, so he compensated with lots of attention and love.
What do you hear of him from your mother? Because that has to be a very difficult relationship, to be with somebody who, as a profession, is living a double life in extremely dangerous places. What did she sort of, what is her memory?
The memory was not really processed. It's not a spontaneous memory, what I remember from him. It's a memory that has been through a lot of thought. He didn't tell us what he did at first. He told us that he worked for security, didn't share details. But she began to understand from publications in Syria and the new language he acquired. She started to understand what he did for a living, but he denied it. Till his very last day, he denied it. So she doesn't remember much from his own stories.
So even in their relationship all this time, when he was at the highest level of the Syrian government, there was no, it was not really acknowledged even in your house?
Yes, this is the way it was back then. It was forbidden to share these details that he was in espionage. He had to live with this secret here and in Syria. He had to lie on both sides and come up with stories, cover stories.
What do you think, from what you hear, from what a little you remember of him, from what your mother explains, from all that's been written about him, because he's really a legend in Israel, what do you think made him? What were his qualities that made him able to become such a successful spy inside Syria, inside enemy territory?
I think it's a combination of qualities. His great love for the country, his willingness to give everything he had, an exceptional memory, and an ability to be well-liked in any society. He was not a very attention-grabbing man. He knew how to do things in secret. He didn't seek attention, and he was a perfectionist. This combination of traits and his bravery.
And we are back. It's really Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. I took back because it's really a taunting story. Think about a person to go to enemy's land and start working there. But he was a good man, I guess, that he was accepted by everybody. But the reason of him being there was to protect Israel, because they were threatening Israel like they're threatening her from the day of existence. And we know what happens. They go in war. They go to, you know, it's really endangering a land. And when a country like Israel being under threat all the time, no wonder she had some of those. But these days, because of an openness of world, you know, of the world, and also not many countries are calling to destroy Israel anymore, just one, Iran, and that's, you know, that's free and known to everybody. And we still prefer to go through the diplomatic stage to make sure that maybe, you know, they would not acquire nuclear weapon. So I think that the world is evolving. The day will come that we all will work together because we'll accept each other. That will be the day. We cannot go any other way because this is the way we're going to live. If not, we're going to go and destroy each other. And it's not plausible to think that way. Anyway, so that way, we just want to recall his body and bring him to honorable buried in the state of Israel, in the Holy Land. He gave his life, he sacrificed, he worked hard. And the fact that he acknowledged the risk that Syria gave to its neighbor doesn't mean that he's, is going to be deprived from honorable barrier. All right? So maybe sometimes they will have a good sense to return his body. Anyway, let's go on. I want to welcome a very, very dear rabbi to the State of Israel today. Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks is in the house, is in Israel. He's not here, of course, but is in Israel, and the land probably is very happy, because when the divine, a man that was touched with God, by God, is visiting the Holy Land, it means that good time is about to be here, and I hope that for last. I know that Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks wrote a new book, and as talented as he is, his book probably will be extra famous more than before, because this is the time that everybody needs to find God and maybe guidance. Maybe they're going to find some common sense and come together. And Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Lord Jonathan Sacks, has a very good candid view of the world. Let's listen to what he says.
Hardly a week, maybe hardly a day goes by without some terrible act of violence somewhere in the world. And so much of it is being done by religious people, seemingly in the name of God. And one of the reasons I wrote this book is to try and work out, how can you actually do that? What makes people kill in the name of the God of life, or wage war in the name of the God of peace? What is it that connects religion with violence? Or between violence and monotheism, or between violence and the Abrahamic monotheisms, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam? To answer it, I had to delve deep in the history of religion and religious conflict, as well as evolutionary biology, game theory, psychology, and sociology. But I've tried not to keep it there. I've also tried to think our way through to a better future, to some new religious ideas for the 21st century that might pull us back from the abyss. Can we deliver a message as powerful as religious extremism that leads away from violence and toward respect between faiths? Whether we're Jews, Christians, Muslims, or just secular humanists concerned about the future, I hope that people who are just interested in the politics of the 21st century, who are fascinated by this growing phenomenon of religious extremism, and who are asking basically, is there anything we can do about it? I think they'll find the book interesting. And whether they agree or not, I think they'll find it a challenging read.
All right, and that was Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks talking about his new book, Not in God's Name, which is a proper name to call a book these days, when everybody is calling, God, and they're doing all this act of violence. It makes sense. Anyways, in Israel, I hope he has a blessed day. Now, going on, do you know what's going on the ground in Israel? Let me tell you, there is a talk. There is a talk about new government, a new coalition. That being said, we had, we had election a year ago. And a year ago, Benjamin Netanyahu got elected. Now, for a slim 61 from 120, he has a majority of one in the Knesset, which makes his life very hard to live, because every vote needs to full attention of all the members of the Knesset and cabinet, of course, and it's not an easy task to get them all in line, especially when there are some rebels always in the pack. Anyway, the center party or the left-wing party, which is center to the left, it's not real left, Labour, in coordination with the movement, another party of Tzipi Livni and the Labour movement led by Isaac Herzog, they were talking to establish a new coalition and to join Benjamin Netanyahu in the coalition. Now, of course, the left got the fit and they didn't want, and the rights inside the party is incredible. So sure enough, we had, another right-wing party leaders that decided, oh, maybe you guys talk about coalition, maybe we'll join in if it's serious offer. And sure enough, Benjamin Netanyahu called Lieberman and today, and they had met at 4 p.m. And Mr. Lieberman, the really strong AOC, asked to be the new defense minister of Israel. And sure enough, they decided to make a group of negotiation team to join and maybe to rearrange the cabinet. So while Israel is rearranging its coalition, you know what can happen. Somebody will get upset. Somebody will get a fit, and somebody can threaten to leave, because this is not a coalition of sturdy, one-party coalition. You got the very, very religious group. Then you have the less but very religious group. Then you have another religious group. And they're all like three, they should be on one party if you ask one. But the truth of the matter is all bets are up. While somebody wants to rearrange the table can be rearranged for real. So wishing luck to Benjamin Netanyahu, and I hope that whatever he does is the best for him, for the government of Israel, for the state of Israel, for the people of Israel, and by all means for God Almighty, because we need his blessing. All right, so let's listen to some music and we'll be back after that. Now, Y5O, that was the music from that incredible show that we all loved when we were young. And, the new one ain't bad itself, or the old new one. Anyway, I love Hawaii and I wish to go there sometimes in the future soon, I guess. Anyway, let's talk back on the Middle East. Remember, last week we had a session where we talked about the Saudis foreign minister that spoke about diplomacy to disengage Syria from Assad. Now we have, again, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Saudis talking again. Let's listen to it.
Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeir has threatened that Syrian president will either be removed through a political process or by force. Jubeir says that many may be coming for Plan B in Syria. That time may be coming for Plan B in Syria. He added that if President Bashar al-Assad does not abide by efforts to establish a truce across Syria, alternatives will need to be looked at. He threatened to intensify military support to militants in Syria. Jubeir made the remarks following another round of international Syria support group talks in Vienna. Saudi Arabia and several regional and Western countries, including the U.S., have been supporting anti-Damascus groups since the beginning of the crisis in 2011. And now we're joined out of Oregon by Mr. Mike Harris of Veterans Today. Now, Mr. Harris, Saudis are threatening to use force in Syria. Are they frustrated with the way their terrorist proxies have made progress as of late?
Well, let's go back to another fundamental step on this. Saudi Arabia has admitted today that they are backing state-sponsored terrorism against Syria. That's what they've said. They're going to back their proxies who have been waging this illegal war under the guise of terrorism, ISIS. Now we know whose fingerprints are on it. They own it now. It's time for the international community. It's time for the countries of the world to spank Saudi Arabia. It's time for them to really be dressed down and sanctioned. And I would start with, since the global oil prices are so low, let's start with a boycott of buying Saudi oil. And let's bankrupt them. Do it that way. Because they admitted today that they are backing state-sponsored terrorism. We know that ISIS is a construct of Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and elements that are connected to the U.S. But this is the first time that Saudi Arabia has come out and owned the fact that they truly are the sponsors of state terrorism.
And Mr. Harris, Iran's been at odds with Riyadh over Riyadh's insistence on meddling in countries' internal affairs, especially in the Middle East. Syria isn't the only country, as you well know. They're also in Yemen. I mean, is Iran in the right to want Saudi Arabia to stay out of the internal affairs of regional countries? And why is Riyadh so insistent and adamant and so aggressive on getting involved in the internal affairs of these countries?
Well, I can't second guess why the Saudis are doing it, but it appears that Saudi Arabia is losing influence in the region. And as a result of losing influence, they're going to take influence by force. That's what it appears that they are doing. This is really a sad day. First of all, Saudi Arabia, they have been the ones who've been spreading radical Islam, the Wahhabist blasphemy around the world for the last 60, 70 years. It's time that the world recognize that the source of radical Islam, of terrorism, resides within Saudi Arabia. And maybe it's time for a regime change in Saudi Arabia and make that a more democratic country instead of this this petty kingdom of thugs and thieves that Saudi Arabia is showing themselves to be.
And if Riyadh, let's say it's just hypothetically successful in inserting a Wahhabi mentality type government in Syria and or Yemen, how would that affect the Middle East?
It would be an unmitigated disaster. Unmitigated disaster. You see, they've been targeting all of the secular Islamic regimes. Those are the only ones who've been under attack. The ones who are the theocracies, like Saudi Arabia, get a free pass. But you look at Libya, you look at Iraq, you look at Syria, you look at Afghanistan. All of the secular regimes have been targeted for destruction. And Saudi Arabia is up to their eyeballs in this. They own the fact today that they are a state sponsor of terrorism, and it's time for the world to sanction them and boycott all Saudi oil products.
Thank you, Mr. Mike Harris, for your contribution to the program. That's Mr. Mike Harris, editor of Veterans Today, joining us out of Oregon.
All right. All right, and we are back. This is Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. This is Impossible Truth for real. Just realizing, you know, that the war is getting worse because when they indicate the Saudis are up, you know, turn their neck involved, they are involved everywhere. And the Iranian, another party that can say, you know, to anybody, stay away when they are involved in Syria, in Iraq, in Lebanon. They manage Hezbollah, they sponsor terrorism, and they want to destroy Israel. So I think for all bets, Iran is the bad guy in this, even though, you know, this claim was like, oh, you know, the Saudis. Because we cannot decide to take the whole world upside down in order to reorganize it. It's not us, you know, to destroy the world. We need to fix it. So if there is some kind of communication in one party, we need to resolve it. And the fact that they were talking about diplomacy at first and they didn't, you know, succeed, it was a week they talked about, you know, long ago to make sure that Assad is out from Syria. Think about it. He killed hundreds of thousands. You know, like how many were there? I'm so sorry, but it's like 400,000 and more Syrian got killed in this 5-6 years war, and nobody's doing anything, and he's still in power. Of course, we have no... I don't think we have any other way. You know, we in the free world, we need to empower people who empower their people, not destroy them. It's by, you know, if even one person is dead, the boss needs to go. There is no other question. We need to make sure that the people of Syria are free, and we need to start reorganize, and we have to take an effort. Today I learned that, you know, the Russians are building a base there. So I don't know what's going to happen, but if there is a base in Syria of this, of, you know, Russian, which they help with, you know, keep Assad, it's going to be really bad. I think we have a time to make international conference for real to see how we're going to solve the situation in the Middle East. And this time, please invite me, because it's about time that, you know, you guys stop lecturing all the rest of the world and making the thing worse and worse. Geneva, they talked about Geneva for Libya. Get your stuff together and let's work on it. 6 years of Syrian, there are 15 millions on the go. I'm not, you know, Syrian are not my brothers. They are enemies of Israel. But it's enough. It's enough. No, it's enough from the first day, but it's enough. And, you know, John Kerry, Secretary John Kerry, was calling the world attention in 2013. We were not aware to the level of destruction that was happening in Syria. We weren't aware. We didn't know. But from then to now, we do know. We have no right to overlook it. We need to take some action to call, you know, to call the party to play right and make it happen. And sure, yes, you're talking about the Saudis. The Saudis are helping. I know that the Saudis are working with Egypt. I know that they're planning to help around. Not everybody's perfect. But one thing they need to know, and I'm talking about their faith. They said they are not giving up their faith and not their security. And I'm going to repeat it as far as the state of Israel. Israel is not going to give up her Jewish faith and not her security. It's a democratic country, and everybody has the right to observe his faith. So until the Saudis decide that Jews have the right to exist too, it will be hard for us to have any kind of relation, but it's up to them. Anyway, I went through a lot of trail to make you understand how it's impossible to live in this side of the world. And then, you know, you get a guest from overseas saying, oh, play nice, talk democracy. Why you don't let the Palestinian leave? Well, we do. They don't want to let us Jews leave. Jewish people. I don't know. Hebrews. Israeli. We don't have to have the right to have a Jewish state. It's not in their imagination. So anybody who wants, you know, to push himself on anybody has to be out of the game. And that's as far as it goes. Let's go to some music and we'll be back after that. And we are back. We are We're running out of time, you folks, and I know that it was incredible weeks because I spent some time on the Israeli news here in Israel, where they speak in English too, and it's online. It's interesting, but they have such a speedy method of being. So God bless them. Really exhausting, but they were wonderful. They, you know, I replaced somebody for 2 days because she was out of town, so I did it. But I am a BBS radio spokeshost, and I love it. And I think that doing here and using the voice of the people for the people is makes all the difference in the world. And, you know, I love America. Anyway, I want to say goodbye, but I want, before that, I want to take a deep breath and pray for with you all, for the well-being of the humanity all around the globe, for the resolution of all conflict, for incredible successful economy, that we can move and shake again. The baby boomer did their share, and now it's about time that they pass the torch to the next generation. We need to give them the opportunity to prosper, and we're going to do the best we can to help them succeed, because it's about time. We took some efforts away from them, but now that they have to pay the bills that we all spent, we need to help them. And, you know, in that calling, I hope that they'll have a really good election soon in the USA to solve this. Anyway, that was a great show for me. God bless you all. Orly Benny Davis saying goodbye for now. Bye-bye. Talk to you next Wednesday. Ciao, ciao.